This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
It is second down and five. Do they keep it on the ground with Saquon Barkley? They do. He breaks free. He's at the 50, the 40, the 30. He's going to go. Touchdown, Saquon Barkley.
That was the Eagles' win in New Orleans all the way back in week three when the Saints were 2-0 and had scored 91 points in the first two games. 65-yard run, and of course, the unmistakable voice of the longtime voice of the Eagles on radio, Merrill Reese, who joins us right now, courtesy of our BetQ guest hotline. Bet smarter, beat the books, download the BetQL app today, or visit BetQL.com. Always good to have you on. And, you know, I was thinking about you as this game started to become obvious that it would be a big game. It's been a long time since both teams, Merrill, post November 1st, latter half, second half of the season, have had a matchup when both teams have been good.
You know, it's great to talk to you, number one. But number two, it's been so long, and I've been thinking about that too. I've been thinking about all the matchups the Eagles have had, the showdown games with Dallas and some with New York. But it's been a long time since it's been the Eagles in Washington. And I'm glad to see it. And I'm glad to see Washington have the kind of relevance that they're having once again.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. You guys have had all of these major showdown games in November, December, January with the Cowboys and the Giants. And we really haven't had much of anything around here for a long time. But it really feels big from this end. Does it feel that way in Philly?
It does. It really does. Let the Cowboys and the Giants have their own showdown.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean as much, but these are two franchises that really salivate your love for football when you think about them clashing once again.
All right, so what happened from, you know, I know they were banged up when they went to Tampa and got beat, and they were 2-2, and people were questioning the Eagles at that point. What's been different over the last 5 weeks?
Kevin, I have to tell you that I pay very little attention to what happens pre-October, because to me, the September games are just an extension of the preseason.
Right.
Where once upon a time, regular players actually played, saw a half of action in one game, maybe three quarters in another. They used to call the third preseason game the dress rehearsal. There's none of that. None of the players played in the preseason. They don't even tackle to the ground in the training camps today. So I think it takes a while for everything to kind of come into sync and you get to see who is good and who's not. I mean, you made a reference early to the Saints. The Saints, 2 weeks into the season, looked like unstoppable world beaters, and then the bottom fell out. So I just think it was a matter of the Eagles rounding into form a little later than they would have liked. And then you mentioned the Tampa Bay game. All they were missing in the Tampa game was Lane Johnson, their all-pro right tackle, and A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. Other than that, they were perfectly healthy.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a rather big factor in that game. So, you know, from the moment last year started to kind of fall apart at 9-1 or 10-1, I forget when it started, to where they are now, it's a different team personnel-wise. Tell everybody the big differences.
Well, it's more than a bit different team personnel-wise. It's a different team off the field because you have two new coordinators. You have a very experienced defensive coordinator in Vic Fangio, and I think you have one of the bright offensive minds conducting the offense in Kellen Moore. So that is a big difference. Then you add somebody like Saquon Barkley. We were excited about that, but I don't think anybody really expected him to be quite the dominant factor that he's been. I mean, he has been so uplifting on and off the field. He is a terrific guy and a great locker room guy and just an amazing player. So that's big. Jalen Hurts is responding well to the new offense. He struggled a little early with turnovers, but in these last four games, his lowest quarterback rating was 115. He's playing as well as anybody right now. So there's and then there's some other additions. Now, you talk about Saquon coming in and the trumpets blew and everybody got excited. There was another free agent who snuck in the back door, and there were no press conferences for him. He was brought in to be a boost to the special teams and maybe play a little outside linebacker. He's a guy you watch. His number is 53. His name is Zach Bond. He's all over the field making tackles, creating fumbles. He's playing at a Pro Bowl level.
You know, the game in Brazil to open up the season against Green Bay, I came in here the next day to talk, or the Monday, to talk about all the games, and I said, I don't know who the hell number 53 is for Philadelphia, but he was one of the best players on the field in that win over Green Bay, and he's been that throughout. The other thing, you know, Merrill, is that a little bit long in the tooth, a little bit slow last year in the secondary, and you add two rookies, mm-hmm. and it's turned that thing around, hasn't it?
Oh, has it ever. Now, Klingon Mitchell was the number one draft pick for the Eagles, and he has been ready since the day he arrived. I mean, I'm talking about first practice, he looked like a veteran. The other guy was Cooper DeJean from Iowa. And they got him in the second round, although some people had projected him as a first-rounder. And he pulled his hamstring and did very little at training camp. But once he stepped on the field, his presence was immediately felt. So you take two rookies who aren't playing like rookies. They're both athletically gifted. Nobody has beaten Quinyon Mitchell yet. And now you have a great receiver, of course, in Terry McLaurin. So we haven't seen him yet, but he stayed with anybody. He hasn't given up a touchdown, not one.
Yeah, and hasn't C.J. Gardner-Johnson played really well in his return also?
He has, but I would say he's played up to expectations. We knew that he was good, that he was a ball hawk. We saw that 2 years ago, then he left as a free agent. So he's very solid too, but he's not a surprise.
How about the two big dudes up front, Jordan Davis and Jalen Carter? I mean, you have a bunch of Georgia guys on the defense, but how have they played?
Well, Jordan Davis is doing his job, and he is more of a space taker. He's a great guy against the run, but let me tell you something. Jalen Carter is a beast. He has just been wreaking havoc on quarterbacks lately, and anybody who's even near him, he's running over people. So I would say in the last 4 weeks, he has really come into his own. He's special.
All right, let's talk about Nick Sirianni, Merrill. There have been moments this year, like the Jacksonville game, inexplicably taking points off the board. There's been, you know, going back to the early portion of the season before the five-game winning streak, the first game that started it, the Cleveland game, him getting into it with the fans. Is it more harmonious than last year, the same, or less than?
I think it was pretty harmonious last year. There were injuries that took place. There were problems early that they were able to get around. about once it started tumbling downhill and the injuries mounted, and the bottom fell out. But the change in coordinators was big. I think Nick is a very good coach. I think that all that stuff about him fighting with the fans after the Cleveland game was overstated. He'll never do it again, but he wasn't really fighting with the fans. He was just having some fun laughing and yelling back and forth with them. And there was nothing mean or angry about it. But that became a big story. So you'll never see that. Nick will simply end the game and run into the tunnel from now on. Because it took much too much attention. But the players like him. He's an excellent motivator. The practices are well organized. The team is well prepared. He's a very solid coach.
You know, I think after the season, and I'm not even sure NFL fans or even NFC East fans knew that there may have been some issues last year between the coach and the quarterback, or maybe it was the coordinator and the quarterback. Is that all, you know, fixed now? And is the relationship between Kellen Moore and Jalen Hurts, you know, super productive or a lot more productive than last year's relationship?
Well, last year was Brian Johnson, who was a very good coordinator too, but it was really Nick Sirianni. Offense. So they and even Nick said at the end that he thought the offense had grown stale and somewhat predictable. But there was never any animosity between Jalen Hurts and Nick Sirianni. And a lot of people projected that there was. I'm too close to both parties to let that enter my mind. I know that Jalen Hurts, who I talk to often, never said a negative thing about Nick. And Nick loves Jalen Hurts. So that was way, way, way out of proportion.
Brian Johnson here now, Merrill, as part
great
of...
Great guy.
Dan Quinn
staff. Excellent football man. You're lucky to have him. He is terrific. He really is. But he didn't really have a chance to run his offense here.
All right. So tomorrow night, how do you see it?
I see it as a great showdown. I think it's anybody's game. I think they're both excellent teams, and both are really starting to reach their peaks. I think it's going to be fun. I wouldn't dare make a prediction, and I couldn't even tell you that deep down I feel that the Eagles will win, or deep down I think, well, they're going to lose to Washington tomorrow. I think that the team that makes the big play, that comes up with the key turnover, is going to end up winning this game. But I think it's awfully close. It's too close to call. And you're looking at Jalen Hurts, who is really rounding into form as one of the best quarterbacks in football. And you're talking about Jaden Daniels, who has just been sensational. Ron Jaworski said yesterday morning on one of the talk shows, he said that Jaden Daniels is the best rookie quarterback he has ever seen.
Yeah, he's played at a high level. We finally appear to have landed one, Merrill, after all of these years of trying. It's always great to hear your voice. I always appreciate the time you give me. There could be another showdown late December back here, so maybe we'll chat then. But have a good call tomorrow night.
Thank you, Kevin. It's always fun to speak with you.
Merrill Reese, everybody. At M. Reese Eagles. On X, on Twitter, you know that voice over the years. One of the best to ever do it. Been doing it for now 47 years in Philadelphia. All right, we'll do some Denton news when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you news stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, what do we have here today, Denton?
All right, so one of the things we're keeping our eye on, Dan Quinn's going to talk after our show today. You don't love it when he talks before our show, but we're going to find out today whether or not Brian Robinson's going to be good to go on Thursday. Now, he's alluded to with various interviews and social media that he was very close to going this past weekend against Pittsburgh. So I'm a little optimistic that we're going to see number 8 on the field in Philadelphia.
Yeah, it would be huge. I don't think that it discounts or eliminates the possibility of them being productive on offense without him. In fact, in some ways, even though Jalen Carter, Jordan Davis, etc., Zach Bond, by the way, number 53, as Merrill talked about, has had an unbelievable season. What a free agent grab he was in the offseason for Philadelphia. But in some ways, I think they needed him even more against Pittsburgh than Philly, in part because you really can't be one-dimensional against Pittsburgh. I'm not saying it's healthy to be one-dimensional against Philadelphia either, but I wonder if, off of Sunday, if Brian Robinson Jr. couldn't go tomorrow night, if Rodriguez would be used more. I don't know, but it would be great to have him back. He's had some good games against Philadelphia, that's for sure.
Yeah, he really has. We talked about this yesterday. He was very clutch in that game a couple of years ago where they went in on Monday Night Football and beat them. Did you watch any NBA last night by chance?
I didn't. I actually watched Cooper Flagg last night for the first time.
Ah, future wizard. How was he?
Future wizard. He's really good. He's really good. I want to see him more as the season goes along. I think I was expecting a little bit more explosiveness, but very good player. Really, really good player. Transcendent player, Wembanyama, you know, I don't know if that's it, but I have plenty of time to change my mind. It's only November. But I did watch that. I did not watch any NBA. I know the Wizards, they lost the night before to Houston, dropped to 2-7. So what do you have from the NBA for me?
Yeah, the Wizards are in action tonight against Victor Wembanyama right here on the Team 980. Tips off at 8. But if you have an opportunity, you should go back and watch just the late stages of the Warriors-Mavericks game. It was one of those iconic Steph performances. He was, I think he was 4-of-4 from the field in the final 3 minutes.
They played the Mavericks last night, right?
It was Klay's return to Golden State.
Yeah, so how did that go? I actually don't know the answer to this. I did see a couple of highlights when I was getting ready for the show here in my studio. Why are we playing with the NBA in-season tournament floor already?
Well, I think the in-season tournament has started already.
It has?
You remember, it's like Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Oh,
so it's,
right.
Yeah, if you're playing on a Tuesday or a Thursday, you're playing part of the NBA in-season tournament.
I know that when we finally got to it last year, it ended up, I think you and I both decided it was a little bit more interesting than we thought to begin with, but I don't know. I just think these things during football season just have very little hope of getting a ton of attention. But anyway, so first of all, how was Klay received? I would imagine very warmly.
Very warmly. If I have this correct, they had, so Klay Thompson loves boats. I don't know if you are familiar with that. He's a big boat guy. One of the reasons he loved being in Golden State right by the water. So they had Captain Klay hats for all of those in attendance. Or I think they gave like 10,000 out or something like that. So it was a warm reception, and he played pretty well. I mean, he was 7-17, 6-12 from three. He had 22
points. Yeah, I'm
looking
at it right now. 6-12 from behind the arc. That's a big night.
That's a big night for Klay. And one of those, he did the Steph shimmy. Steph was the story of the game. He had 37 in 35 minutes, including that stretch down the fourth quarter where, like, Dallas was putting Luka on Steph. And I'm not a coach in the NBA, as you know. I do this job. I would not put Luka Doncic on Steph in the fourth quarter.
No, that would not be a real good matchup.
Not a great matchup. The problem is they don't really have anybody that can guard him. It was very apparent, and he went crazy. So he had 37, but he made history last night. He joined Michael Jordan and LeBron James. It's a pretty good graphic to be a part of, as the only three guys in NBA history to go for over 35 in back-to-back nights when you're over the age of 36. Pretty good.
Wow. A couple of things real quickly, because I didn't see the game and I really haven't seen the highlights. So Golden State right now has the best record in the West at 9-2. That is a surprise. This was not expected from the Warriors. I know it's only 11 games into an 82-game slate, but they're 9-2. They're off to a great start. I did see something recently, and that is that Buddy Hield's been playing very well, sort of as the Clay replacement. And then what was I going to say? I was going to say something about Curry. Oh no, I was going to say something about Doncic. Somebody sent me, one of our listeners sent me an article written, I forget who it was, about Doncic, and said the complaining from Doncic this year has reached an all-time level. That if we thought it was bad last year and during the postseason, it's been even worse this year, and that they can't get him to stop. They've been trying to in Dallas. They can't get him to stop. There have been multiple occasions where basically he's on the offensive end, you know, screaming and yelling and crying and whining as they're playing 5-on-4 on the other end, but they can't get through to him for whatever reason. It is serial. I think it was you who said last year, nobody commits to whining more than he does. He's a totally committed whiner. It's part of his whole thing. He's having a great season so far scoring-wise, but they're off to a slow start.
Yeah,
they're 5-6 after last night.
They're 5-6, and he's like the Draymond Green of complaining. Remember when Draymond was just getting technicals nonstop?
He's much worse.
Well, I'm talking about when Draymond was getting tossed all the time for stupid things.
Draymond was
dudes.
More demonstrative. Draymond was more like you got a loose screw, dude. This guy is much more committed consistently to doing it throughout a game every night. Draymond would lose it on one call and he'd be tossed because the reaction was over the top.
He'd go nuclear.
Doncic is so consistent with his constant whining, and then does it every night. Like, he does not take a night off from it. It's really off-putting to watch. And by the way, it's hurtful to the team.
It's very hurtful.
I know they made the NBA Finals. I get it.
Imagine if he just put that sort of effort he puts into complaining and just half of that effort into defense. They'd be unbeaten.
Yeah, he can't move his feet.
He can't defend at all. No.
When he does try to defend, it's not the worst thing I've ever seen, to be honest with you. I'm just looking. Golden State and Phoenix. I mean, OKC is where people thought they would be, but Golden State wasn't predicted to be a playoff team. It's early. The story of the NBA is the Cleveland Cavaliers. They haven't lost. They're 12-0.
Yeah, they're 12-0. This is the hottest start since that 15-16 Warriors team that started 24-0.
Yeah.
Checking to see if the Cavs play the Wizards anytime soon so Alex Sarr can break that record.
By the way, I've got my NBA tab opened, and apparently Spoelstra last night in overtime against Detroit. Did you have this ready to go in the news?
I was going to talk about this, not so much for the actual timeout call, but for the viral meme of Jalen Rose's reaction to the timeout call, seeing flashbacks of the Final Four with Chris Webber. It's one of the funniest things that I've seen. I'm stunned.
Well, tell everybody what happened.
So Spoelstra called a timeout late in the game in overtime when they didn't have a timeout. Which is like basketball 101. Coach, you got to know how many timeouts we have. If we have timeouts, and of all the guys to make the mistake, it was Eric Spoelstra. And it cost him a game.
I mean, one of the best coaches of the last, 15 plus years. And I know I've told this story again, but I'll just tell it real quickly for those that have never heard it. So Tommy and I were doing the show, and I was telling the story on a Monday after a game I had coached on a Sunday, in which we were, the team that I was coaching, we were up one at the free throw line with a second free throw, and the other team had no timeouts left. And so I wanted to, of course, instruct my player to miss the free throw on purpose, right? You don't want them to be able to throw the ball in bounds down the court and get a three-point shot off. Up one, up two, it's going to be a three-pointer. It doesn't matter. So I turned to the scorer's table and I said, how many timeouts do I have? I didn't have my assistant coach that day. Those of you who are youth coaches know, sometimes you got somebody helping you and sometimes you're solo. And when you're solo, you can't keep the book. So you rely on the scorer's table. And I said, how many timeouts do I have? And the person at the scorer's table, and she was, probably a high school girl. And she said, you have one left. And so I said, timeout. And I'm telling the kid at the free throw line, I'm like, can you just miss it? But you got to hit the rim. He said, yeah, I can do that, coach. No problem. And I explained to them why we're going to do this. And then I see the referees talking to the scorer's table. And they walk over and they say, coach, you didn't have any timeouts left. We're hitting you with a tech. And I said, well, I just asked if I had any timeouts. And she said that I had one. You guys heard her say, because it was a gym. It wasn't crowded. I said, how many timeouts? She said one. And he said, well, it's not her job. It's your job to keep your own book. And so I said, are you serious? You've got to be kidding me. They're like, nope. So long story short, they got free throws. We had another one. The game goes to overtime. And we lose in overtime. I told the story on the air. And as I was leaving the studio that day, Coach Thompson, who had the show After Hours, was waiting for me in the bullpen as I walked out. And he looked at me and he said, let me get this straight. He goes, how many timeouts do you have? First he said, how old were these kids that you were coaching? And I said, they were 12 or 13 at the time. It was, it was like an eighth grade game, something like that, the seventh grade game, 12 or 13. And he said, and how many timeouts do they give you in a game? I said, I think it's four. And he said, you called all of your timeouts in a game that included 12 and 13-year-olds? He goes, what's wrong with you, boy? And he said, not only that, you wanted to call another one. And I'll never, ever forget that. And then he goes on the air with Doc and Brian, and they just, eviscerated me. It was very funny. But he also said something to me that I'll never, ever forget. He said, in the midst of a game, with young people in particular, less instruction is much better than more instruction. More instruction is for practices, less instruction in the games. And he was right. He was 100% right. I mean, all of us learned so much from Coach and being, lucky enough to be in the same building with him. But I will never forget when he just said, you called for all your timeouts and you wanted to call another one. Very funny. All right, what else do you have?
All right, so I guess people didn't get our applications, but John Krasinski named a 2024 Sexiest Man Alive. I bet you thought that when you watched The Office the first time, that in 12 years, this guy, Jim, is going to be the sexiest man.
Is this like the People magazine thing?
Yeah.
John Krasinski?
Yeah, Jim from The Office, Sexiest Man Alive.
Really? He's a decent-looking guy.
In big glow-up.
Is that a surprise? I don't follow this. Tell me, is that a surprising pick?
Yeah.
His wife is gorgeous. Emily Blunt's gorgeous.
I mean, he looks way better than he did in The Office.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know how the People Sexiest Man thing works. I was always of the belief like it was given to somebody who either had a lot of projects that did really well in the year or had something big coming up to promote, and it would like drive it, and you kind of like barter your way for it.
Does he have another one of those quiet movies coming out or whatever?
I don't think so. I know a guy who was fighting for it, apparently, was Travis Kelce. the representatives for Travis Kelce wanted him to win it because he's dating Taylor Swift, put him on the magazine, you know, up his brand a little bit. But it was instead John Krasinski. I guess we must be on the back page. I'll have to buy the People magazine.
Let me just say, I don't care if he was voted that or not. I like him a lot. I've seen him in interviews. He seems like total normal, down to earth. In fact, all of those people from the show that you and I loved so much all seemed like, you know, total normal people.
Well, not all of them. I mean, Creed is a Creed. I don't think was acting.
Yeah, but he was, you know.
Outside
grassroots,
of him, yes.
1960s.
But I don't think he was acting.
Yeah. But, you know, in terms of the main characters, you know, even Dwight in real life, I think seems like, well, he's a little bit off, but whatever. Yeah, he's married to Emily Blunt, right?
He is, yeah. Yeah, they're married.
Yeah. She's lovely. All right, what else?
All right, how about the college football playoff rankings? The latest edition of the rankings unveiled. I'm going to read this to you as if it were the bracket, not the actual ranking, so there will be some adjustment here. But you got Oregon at number one, Texas at number two, BYU at three as winners of the Big 12, and then Miami at four as winners of the ACC. Then at five, you have Ohio State. Six is Penn State. Seven is Indiana, so they jumped up a little bit.
Wow.
Eight is Tennessee, who allegedly is going to be without Nico I this weekend against Georgia. Nine is Notre Dame.
He's not playing?
According to Chris Felica, the Bear, he said that Nico is not going to play.
So is that why the line was big?
That's why the line
has it gone up since then?
I haven't looked. I can pull it up now. I would imagine after he said that, especially as a gambler, that line has adjusted. Because it was 10.5 yesterday, right? It was a big line.
It's 10 right now.
Maybe it hasn't moved a lot. Maybe the books already
knew that. Who's Tennessee's backup quarterback? I don't even know. Has he played?
He hasn't seen the field a ton. Okay. So you got Notre Dame at 9, Bama 10, Ole Miss 11, and then Boise at 12 as members of the Group of Five, Heisman Group of Five champ. But in the actual rankings, Georgia was at 12 and Boise was at 13.
Yeah, but the Group of Five number one gets in.
Right, so they would occupy the 12 seed.
Ooh, and Georgia's on the outside of that.
Georgia and SMU, the first two teams out.
Well, they won't be next week because they're gonna hammer Tennessee.
They better.
And by the way, BYU might go down this week against Kansas.
you see Colorado in there next week then.
Colorado, in that game against Kansas in a week from Saturday won't be easy. So Oregon won. I mean, you know, I kind of forget this and I have to adjust here. But Oregon at one. And then you also had Ohio State. You had Penn State and Indiana. Four of the... Four of the top seven seeds are Big Ten teams.
Well, for the top five, Ohio State technically ranked second, but they would fall to five in the
right.
brackets.
Right, so four of the top five are Big Ten teams. Man, that's a lot of love for the Big Ten. Tell me where SMU and Army are. I'm just curious. Where's SMU in particular?
SMU is at 14, so they're right behind Boise State. Army moved up a whopping one spot. They are 24.
I mean, do we think that SMU is going to run the table here in the regular season? They're going to be favored against BC, Virginia, and Cal, okay?
They should run the table.
So they have the one loss, which, by the way, was a three-point loss to BYU, who's number nine in the country and undefeated. And then they're going to play an ACC championship game. Yes, SMU is going to play in the ACC championship game against, I think, either Clemson or Miami.
Correct.
If they win, I mean... I think SMU is, I actually think they're the best team in the ACC.
I think there's a fair argument for it. They've had some close ones, so like they should run the table. I don't know that they will run the table. But
other than the loss to BYU, who have they had some close calls against?
So they had a close one against Duke where they won by one.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
right,
I mean,
right,
that
yes.
that was the one where you look at and say, whoa. Louisville
Although
a couple
Duke's
weeks
played well
ago.
This year. They're 7-3, 7-2, something like that.
They are, and they have Malik Murphy, who was the backup last year at Texas and then left because Arch was staying. But they should. I mean, Virginia's actually been a bit surprising this year. They're not nearly as terrible.
Virginia's played very well this year.
Yeah, they're not nearly as terrible as they have been in years past. It's just the ACC is so weird. I don't really trust anybody in the conference.
Well, right now, I have a feeling SMU ends up in the playoff in front of Miami. They hang a second loss on Miami. But here's a question for you. Who gets in, Clemson or Miami, as the other team in the ACC championship game against SMU? Because Clemson and Miami haven't played.
They haven't played. Well, Miami only has one loss. So I think one of the tiebreakers.
Clemson only has one loss in the conference.
In a conference. I think one of the tiebreakers would go to overall record where they would outlast them.
Okay.
Although right now.
I was thinking, is it possible that Miami runs the table, is not in the ACC title game, SMU beats Clemson, and now all of a sudden you've got two ACC teams as possibilities?
I don't know how accurate ESPN is in terms of how they list things as it relates to tiebreakers, but it is worth pointing out that Clemson is listed above Miami on the conference's standing. So maybe Clemson does have the tiebreaker there.
Well, if that's the case, it would be common opponents. And remember, Clemson lost to Louisville. Miami beat Louisville. Miami lost to Georgia Tech. Clemson
has not played Georgia Tech.
Okay. So that would be Miami as well.
Yeah, that would lift Miami. The only thing would be, I guess, just scores against other ACC teams. I don't know where that would fall.
That's down the pecking order of tie-breaking.
I would hope so, because that would benefit Clemson, because they were shellacking teams during the middle portion of their schedule where Miami was escaping teams.
So I guess right now, Boise, in terms of the group of five, it's got to be Boise, Army, and then that's it, right? It's going to be either one of those two teams.
Well, you have Tulane in there as well. I don't know how the committee views
Tulane
Washington.
Tulane plays at Navy this Saturday, right?
They do. I don't know how the committee views Washington State, they're 8-1 at 18.
Yeah.
So they're in that conversation as well.
When's the Army-Notre Dame game? Is it next weekend?
Next week. So Army's off this weekend. They get Notre Dame. If Army beats Notre Dame, they skyrocket up the rankings.
Yeah. Now, let me just say, this Tulane-Navy game is huge from this standpoint. If Navy beats Tulane on Saturday, then it's very likely Army and Navy will play in back-to-back weeks. They'll play in the AAC championship game, home field, who it would be, you know, probably at Army. And then they'd play their traditional scheduled game, which is the weekend after championship weekend.
Yeah.
Wherever the game is this year. I forget where it is.
It's here.
Is it Philly? Oh, it's here.
It's right here. Yeah.
Yeah, we knew that. Yeah. That would be pretty wild. And like which of the two games, obviously the first one would be the most important. And imagine Denton this. Imagine this. Army beats Notre Dame. They're really good. I don't think they can beat Notre Dame, but I think they've got a better shot of hanging in there with Notre Dame than Navy did.
I do as well. I think their defense is better.
If they pulled that off and they were now the leading contender of the group of five, and they played Navy and beat Navy in the AAC title game, or lost to Navy, but then got another chance to play another game, but after the playoff had already been set. I mean, they'd play that game, obviously, because it's a massive tradition game, but then they'd be gearing up, win or lose. Like, how would they play that game if they were already in the playoff?
I mean, they would give it their all, just because that's kind of like the tradition of the rivalry. But at that point, that would be their potentially 13th game of the regular season. You know, they
the scenario that I'm painting is not necessarily realistic in terms of Army being in the playoff, because they'd have to beat Notre Dame.
Right.
But the scenario that I'm giving everybody for back-to-back Army Navy games comes down to Navy and Tulane on Saturday in Annapolis. If Navy wins that game, Army and Navy are going to play back-to-back games against each other.
Yeah. That'd be pretty nuts.
Nuts. All right, what else?
All right, finally here, are you excited to see Mike Tyson in action on Friday?
No. Zero interest in watching this. Will
zero.
Not pay for it, will not watch it. I'm assuming it's pay-per-view, right?
No, it's on Netflix.
Oh, it's on Netflix?
Yeah.
What so time? No, I think I'm going to the Maryland Marquette game, so that's probably not going to be
Well, the fight starts at 8. What time is Maryland Marquette?
8. Yeah, there's. I'm not watching.
I'm sure the main event. You know how boxing goes. The main event's not going on until at least 10:30, 11. Right. Maybe you can go to what's the famous bar in Maryland?
What'd you say?
What's the famous bar that the students go to in Maryland? In
College Park, Bentley's.
Yeah, Bentley's. You can throw it on the TV in Bentley's.
Yeah, I think I talked about this with Tommy on the podcast, and it's, thanks for bringing that up and reminding me that I do want to send my, condolences to the family of John Brown. John's owned Bentley's since the late 1970s. He's a legend in College Park. He's a legend when it comes to all of the athletic programs, men's basketball, men's football in particular. And I've known John for a long time, and he passed away last weekend, and he was just a nice man who had, he opened that place, back in the late 70s, and it became the legendary place. I mean, for those of us who are Terps, the VU was legendary. But the VU and Bentley's right next to each other on Route 1. And John was such a sweet guy, and I know a lot of people are really upset about it. I send my respects and rest in peace, John, because every interaction I ever had with John over the years was just, he's just a gentleman. So sad to lose him. All right. Anything else?
No, that's all I got for you.
Okay. We'll do a quick what do you got when we come back. And then next hour, we've got some NFL talk, and we'll get back to Washington, Philadelphia as well. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We are free and live on the Odyssey app. So I got this from Chris Z. This is the what do you got for the day. Kevin, tomorrow night Howie Roseman will be face-to-face with Adam Peters, who has, to his credit, the lopsided trade of the year. Jahan Dotson for a third-round pick. Much better receivers went for less. About to change with Peters chess playing versus the Eagles, Giants, and Cowboys. Okay. Guys, you got to learn your lesson on this thing, okay? You cannot call a trade one-sided, lopsided in the moment. You have to see how it plays out. Do I like that they got a third-round pick when they dealt Dotson and some of the receivers at the deadline went for less, better receivers? Of course, it seems right. Seems like Washington got the much better part of the deal. But, Chris, and I don't know this to be a fact, but, people like you were pounding your chest in the drum for the trade back for Jahan Dotson to begin with in the 2022 draft. Right when, Washington got a boatload of picks that turned into Brian Robinson Jr. and Sam Howell, and I forget who else at this point. But Chris Olave's better than all of them. I mean, the Saints won that trade in hindsight. And Washington should have actually, in the 2022 draft that year, they should have taken Kyle Hamilton anyway. At number 11. But my God, for all of the times over the years, I mean, I'm talking about during the Dan regime, and I'm not saying it was every trade, but that trade, you guys were going nuts, just like you were going nuts over the signing of Carson Wentz, the Sam Howell, conversation and how it related to that trade. It was way too early. It's too early now. Dotson's had a couple of big plays in the Eagles' last two games. It seems like Washington got the better of that deal, but let's also not forget that maybe the Eagles got the better of the deal when they traded up in the draft this past season to number 40 for Washington's pick, their second round pick. Washington traded back and got more, and they ended up taking Sanristil and Sinnott, but the Eagles got Cooper DeJean. You don't think Washington could use Cooper DeJean right now? He looks like one of the best young corners in the game. So it's just way too early to call these things. It's like some of you'd never learn your lesson. I'm not saying I haven't gone nuts on certain trades to begin with, But usually they're for players we know more about, a lot more about. You know, like the Carson Wentz trade, it was just so obvious that there were massive red flags all over it. Two decent organizations, including Philadelphia, you know, moved on from him at great expense. And Washington ends up trading picks and eating the entire salary. I mean, that was incompetence at the highest level. And it was out of desperation, if you remember. You know, Dan wanted something because Ron couldn't deliver Garoppolo or anything else. And, you know, all hell broke loose. And then, you know, got everybody out there super sensitive. Any criticism about Wentz, my God, we saw what the team president did in defending him. And it was just a terrible trade from the jump in terms of what his value was in the moment. But when you're talking about young players who aren't established yet, and you can say, okay, well, Jahan had 22 and 23 and he stinks and they paid a third rounder for him. You might be right. I'm not saying that you're wrong. And I like that they got that much, although I think that's exactly what we guessed that they were going to get for him in the moment, Denton, is, you know, a third or a fourth round pick. And they got a third, and by the way, they were able to turn not that third, but their own third into Marshawn Lattimore, and it looks really good now. It looks really good now. But Howie Roseman's been doing this for a while, and he's been really good at doing this for a while. He's got a hell of a track record. And in the draft, they traded up for Washington's second number two pick after Washington took Johnny Newton. Washington got picks, and maybe Sanristil and Sinnott and anything else they got out of that deal will look much better than Cooper DeJean in the long run. It's possible, but Philadelphia got themselves a player in Cooper DeJean, and I think Washington's going to do really well with Sanristil and Sinnott. I do. But the Olave trade, I mean, a year after the Olave trade, people were saying, my God, we fleeced New Orleans. It was way too early a year after the trade to say that, let alone, you know, 6 months after, not 6 months, 3 months after the trade or whatever it's been. That's all. All right. Up next, we will get buy and sell. We'll do some NFL buy and sell. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.